Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Chilluminati podcast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined today by the essential North and South Poles to my personal magical compass, Jesse and Alex.
Oh, we are.
I'm trying to figure out what that's even a classic television show. Oh, of course.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Chilluminati podcast. Chilluminati Patreon. Please get money on the Chilluminati website. Go to the website and buy a ticket.
Right?
Who's the North and South Pole?
Which one's which?
Yeah. And how are you going to decide?
Oh, that's easy. Alex is South because he's cool.
Oh.
And I'm North because everyone talks about me, but no one wants to visit.
Wait, except for that one like Norwegian guy that got totally screwed by the thing.
Yeah. Everyone thinks there's a lot more going on in the North Pole than there actually is.
Unless you believe in Christmas. In which case, you're the North Pole because you're Santa Claus. And I'm the South Pole.
Ho, ho, ho.
And I'm the South Pole because I'm... Is there a Wario
filled with
to
penguins.
Is there a Wario to Santa Claus?
The Krampus?
No, but they live in the same area. You're asking, is there a reverse Santa Claus?
It should be like Slanta. Like, you know, like something that sucks.
Yeah. But Claus is spelled C-L-A-W-S. Yeah. And he's got claws.
Slanta.
Right.
Anyway,
Adam next to a big titted rat Fasciana.
We love to start every episode by just clapping our hands and at our fandom and having them create a beautiful image for us. Last week, your J.O. Fuel was me as a big titty rat. Shout outs to that. Actually coming into I know what this episode is about, but what a great example of chaos magic at work besides that rat appearing on the Reddit, I guess we asked directly for it, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
Please buy tickets to go see us in real life in Chicago in November. It's not that far away. It's almost sold out. You guys are going to miss it. It's going to sell out. I'm serious. Yeah. So, you know, this is not for Christmas. So you got to do it early. You got to get it soon. It's already almost August. If you want to think about July that way, July is almost August.
We're bumping Halloween to a single day. Everybody who's coming to the show, Halloween's actually on November 1st for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that
what we're going to do? I thought for sure we'd be like, Halloween's over. We're moving on.
What are we moving to? Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving based.
Or maybe we'll ride that energy, that weird between the scary and the weird. We're like back in like pilgrim imagery. Like, what's the movie? Sleepy Hollow? Like, that feels like it fits, right? It's like great November 1st.
Sure.
Yeah. Movie? Film? Not the story,
can I just can I just force everybody in the audience to watch a Neil Breen movie with us?
I would
That's
rather
you
didn't.
Do?
That's I don't want to
say your live show.
You're
going
to say fly to Illinois. And here's what we're going to have you guys do. Yeah.
That'd be a waste of everyone's time and money. I would go. I'd be like, you know, we screwed up.
For about 5 minutes, I'd be laughing really hard. It'd be really great.
That's one of those things where the situation is funnier than the actual carrying out of the situation. And we could have achieved what we wanted to achieve just by talking about it. You know?
Yeah. It's a weird. Hey. Chaos magic, baby. Which brings us to our main episode.
I got you there. We're throwing out the links.
This is going to be a multi-parter because chaos magic is a very interesting and fascinating aspect of the occult world. But before we dive in, do you know anything about chaos magic, gentlemen?
Wanda
Maximoffs.
Is this real magic
or is this nonsense like we've been talking about so far?
This is like the secret.
What do you consider real magic, Jesse? Sorry, hang on. I need Jesse's clarification of what he considers real magic.
I mean, like what we've been doing so far, we've had several episodes building up to something about magic and how we've had what is magic and how does magic work and da 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 da. But in the end, it's all just like, I call it magic because I'm fun and quirky rather than it's actually like, ta-da, I produced fire with my palm.
Having the guts to call Having the guts to call anything magic is chaos magic. Like, to me,
you're not wrong necessarily.
To me, chaos magic, my understanding of it is literally that it's the secret.
Kind of. You'll see.
Like, so, in the continued tradition of this is going to be utter bullshit is what I'm hearing.
The secret isn't utter bullshit.
With a very baseline. Like,
it's just not a secret.
All right. Now, you know what? So, Jesse, all right, here we go. We'll practice some chaos magic. Ready?
Okay.
You now know the word, like what chaos magic is as an overall thing. It's bullshit magic, but you now know chaos magic. Okay. Right. Now I need you to forget about chaos magic. Go. Did you forget?
No.
Oh, dude, that's
all right. Then you failed. You didn't
do
chaos magic right.
That's impossible.
Hold on, wait. What do you mean?
Find out as we continue. So we're gonna dive in right now, and don't what you
continue with what though.
We're gonna talk about chaos magic and actually talk about.
Oh, why didn't you say so,
Jesse? You are a magician at the highest level. Congratulations. Today, gentlemen, and obviously everybody listening, we are embarking on a journey we've been talking about for quite a while. And I don't use the word lightly because there's a lot of reading that is involved, and I'm not even sure I really understand everything it wants me to understand. I don't think that's the point.
I think you just have to decide you understand is part of it.
I think you're correct. And for the next couple episodes, we're going to be dissecting a topic that has been one of the ones that I've been most excited to cover, a subject that lives in the strange, like, borderlands between psychology, religion, art, and pure unadulterated what the fuckness, because there's names in this that we're going to hear today that you both are very familiar with and also not familiar with whatsoever, because today we're starting our series on chaos magic. Now, take every image right now in your heads you have of magic, both the stage magic bullshit, Jesse, also like that.
First of all, you mean the only real type
of magic?
This is a semantic sadness that these two very respectable things have been linked forever by somebody deciding they have the same word for their name. I just want to say,
is amazing. It's
I just want to say shout outs to all the people that have dedicated their lives to the very not paranormal discipline of stage magic, the performance art, if you will. It's amazing. Yeah. Nobody who's doing it is really trying to convince you that it's real, right?
Except for Chris Angel.
Well,
that's because he's a mind
even
freak,
he,
dude.
Even he, the realness of it, I think he's just like, he's like, come on, mind freak.
But he might be, we'll see. We'll see how you feel about who's actual chaos magicians at the end of all of this. But yeah, all the images of your head of your stage magic stuff, of like fantasy book stuff, pointy hats, wands, dusty tomes written in an unknowable language, rigid hierarchies of secret societies. Take all that shit, put them in a little box, and then set it on fire. Pointless. That's not what any of this is about. Because talking about chaos magic is not just disagreeing with those traditions. It kind of takes a philosophical sledgehammer to them and smashes them up into tiny little fucking pieces, sifts through the rubble of what's valuable and shiny, grabs at what those are, and kind of like hotwires it all together to create what chaos magic is. The central load-bearing axiom of chaos magic, a phrase that you will hear again and again as we go through this, is a quote famously used by writer William S. Burroughs, who himself, from what I could find, likely pulled from this quote from historical accounts of Hassan E. Sabah and the Order of Assassins. That's
Make
like,
America Great Again.
that's it. All the way back from the Order of Assassins back in the day. And the phrase is simple. It is nothing is true and everything is permitted.
The Assassin's Creed fans out there must be losing their minds right now.
Quite literally taken by the Assassin's Creed franchise and used, obviously. It's just exactly what you would recognize it from. But its philosophical like weight in this is immeasurable. What it means for the chaos magician is that objective, capital T, truth is either non-existent or completely inaccessible to us. Therefore, belief is not a state of being. It is not a destination. Belief is a tool, a piece of software, if you will, to run a very or perform a very specific function.
Pause.
Yeah,
pause.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you're talking about philosophy and not magic.
We're talking about Jesse World.
They match here.
I, mm,
they mesh here. Yeah, yes.
This is absolutely the intersection of like, is thinking about something
magic
controlling it. Like, are you playing Cyberpunk 2077 when you're thinking about playing Cyberpunk 2077?
So this is really, really what I'm hearing is instead of stage magic just happens to be named magic, like this is just people call this magic and it's just philosophy.
No, because
disguised.
You can still enact your will. You can still enact
just
your
name
will.
things because you wanna.
There's a lot more to it that makes this more magic than philosophy.
Like, if at I any promise. Point in time I'm not seeing any discussion in the next hour and a half or whatever of like you can produce something magical in the definition of magic besides like what a magical evening.
Nope. Like
if we're not doing something interesting, I'm gonna be like bullshit.
You're
I'm
talking about like a fireball
myself.
Or no, like getting no, somebody I'm, to do something you want.
We got rituals coming up, Jesse.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Just hang on. So before we move on, let me just lay down the sources, the main books I would point you to that I did my research on that I would suggest as well. If you're gonna jump into this kind of cold and never have done any research about this before, using the book Condensed Chaos, An Introduction to Chaos Magic by Phil Hine is where I would recommend anybody to begin their journey. There's audiobooks of it. You can get it everywhere. It's presented as like a kind of concise, accessible introduction to the topic. It covers the main core principles, the history of all of chaos magic, and practical techniques that you can use that are designed for newcomers. But then after you got that under your belt and you still want more, and you just want to have a general greater understanding of this stuff, there's two other books I would point you to. Liber Null and Psychonaut by Peter J. Carroll, and The Book of Results by Ray Sherwin. The first one is...
That one's for Jesse.
Yeah, exactly.
The Book of Results.
Is for Jesse. Yeah. Basically, the first one, Liber Null and Psychonaut, is more of like a basic philosophy and practical approaches to chaos magic, where the second one, the one for Jesse, is more known for lucidly explaining an individual that we'll be talking about today, Austin Spare's key innovation in sigil magic, particularly. And then if you really want to go to the grandfather of it all, the primary source, The Book of Pleasure, also subtitled The Psychology of Ecstasy by Austin Osmond Spare, is where you would, that's the very, very, very beginning. I would kind of like, but I recommend that later. You kind of want to get to that point later on after you have a better understanding of the concept of it.
Feels more academic. Yeah. Feels more academic and historical of a text. Than
yeah.
Yeah. Maybe so condensed.
This is, I cannot stress to you how much this entire, like listening to you two, is stressing me out, like listening to Jordan Peterson talk, where it's like, you said nothing. You said nothing. And that's what this is. You two of you are like, it's like, in the face, I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well, here we go. We're going to get into it. Hopefully you have an idea.
It's driving me crazy.
Jesse, to help really get our heads around this, it helps to understand a fundamental split that happened in Western occultism. For a long time, there's kind of been this weird, I'd say false dichotomy. And as writer Phil Hine puts it, there's a difference between, or split happened between high magic, quote unquote, and low magic, quote unquote. High magic was seen as the respectable stuff, the quest for spiritual enlightenment, uniting with God, ascending the planes, all that very abstract and philosophical stuff. It was the magic of the study in the university, essentially. And then low magic, or sorcery, was, I guess for lack of a better term, the dirty stuff. Magic.
We talked about this in our little, I didn't talk about it, but there was an 80s... informational pamphlet about it from Chilluminati.
I do remember that. But this is like, yeah, this is stuff that's magic for results, essentially. Curses, love charms, finding treasure, influencing people to do what you want them to do. It was the magic of like the village cunning man.
Getting stuff.
Practical folk magic, as we dealt with earlier in a few, in Alex's series, with them kind of mashing with the messy realities of life. It was seen as purely material, base, and somehow less worthy in the people who practice the higher magic, all in quotes, obviously, eyes that split. So chaos magic kind of like looked at this division and called it for what it was, a self-imposed limitation. It sought basically to try and tear down that wall, arguing that the techniques for achieving spiritual enlightenment and the techniques for, say, finding a parking spot are fundamentally the same thing. The only difference is the intention and in the window dressing. Chaos magic puts sorcery, the magic of results, front and center, not as a lesser practice, but as the ultimate proof that magic works. Alex, were you about to say something? I apologize.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if you want to think about this, like,
I hope you're all lighting up for this shit, dude. Light up a bowl, rub yourself in, like, your favorite oils. Let's do it, dude.
I don't even, I feel like it's pretty easy to understand. If you could get on the level of what I was talking about the other day, about anything having the potential to be magic, right? And you think about the Western, like, occult tradition of, like, fucking wizards and shit.
Yep.
Right? Of antiquity, right?
Yeah, bro.
And then you think about, like, Shakespeare, right? And you think of the old stuff as, like, Shakespeare and how, like, we still study Shakespeare and we look at Shakespeare and we, like, need to, like, understand that type of thing. But then there's also, like, current writers and current, like, culture that creates another type of, like, extremely good with English and extremely deep knowledge of that discipline, right? And so they're both really important, studyable, valuable parts of one discipline that almost seem unrelated because of how far apart they end up. Like, I feel like chaos magic is, in a more broad sense, like almost like pop culture magic or something. It's like modern rather than antiquity. It's like, if you imagine,
I think it's older than you think,
but that's the modern, like, when you talk about modern writing in English, for example, you're talking about stuff from, you know, almost 200, you know, 100, almost 100, over 100 years ago. And so, like, to me, it feels like instead of it being like the King Arthur type, right, it's just something for us now that we use in the same way about the systems that govern our world now, you know? Like, that's kind of how I see it.
Jesse?
I'm going to get yelled at by strangers on Reddit how much I want to interrupt. So I'm going to be quiet and absorb. I'm going to take it in.
But it
genuinely, even what Alex just said there, this all sounds like nonsense. However, I'm open to the attitudes and what you're about to tell me.
Just be open to the occult and,
if you could be aware that there's occultists that existed, right? You can imagine that there's different.
Oh, I'm the occult. I get the occult.
I would say chaos magic also is a foundational layer to another individual that we'll be covering, and I can't wait to cover in depth in the future.
Like, if we want to go full Crowley, I'm here for that.
That's the exact name that will be coming up. Crowley is a huge influence.
Even with that, besides the lore of Aleister Crowley and, like, what's going on there, I think most of it also is just, you know, during the time period, you got a bunch of people that got nothing to do. They're all rich and they're like, we're practicing black magic and we're up to no good. Oh, Chester. Oh, am I dirty? Yes, you are, Denise.
If you don't crack open the book, that's a great description of what the scene of magic was at the time of Aleister Crowley. And even today, if you look at, like, witchy girls and stuff like that, there's, like, an aesthetic, right? And then there's, like, in the girl group of witchy friends, there's, like, the one witchy friend who, like, actually reads the books and, like, does stuff, and they, like, go to for actual advice on how to do stuff when they really want to do a ritual. And there is, you know, it speaks to a tradition and a structure, you know, regardless of, you know, how key it is to the scene and the people practicing it. I believe that there is a deep and almost, like, you know, almost 150 year history to this type of occultism that we're going to talk about today.
Well, simply put it more simply, did Aleister Crowley's inarguable impact on history and his name being as popular as it is even today, not evidence of his success with magic and succeeding in what he was attempting to do?
And if that's what chaos magic is, that's interesting, but I don't buy it as magic. But what I do think, like, there's Wicca, and there's also different things where you could be like, okay, I know what that is, I know how that's work. But again, everything you're saying with chaos magic, air quotes, sounds just like the type of...
What about salesmanship?
Yeah, it sounds like the type of things, like, I'm not sure exactly what the phrasing is, but it's when we're having a conversation, and I say to you, like if you say a bunch of stuff, and then I keep asking you why, or questions, or repeat back to you what you said in order to get you to talk more. It's sort of like that sort of conversation splicing that Sure. Like, it's not, that's not magic. That's just, you're messing with people's heads.
I'm not here to convince anybody chaos magic is real,
God
brother.
God damn you. God damn you.
I'm not a practitioner of it. It is about deciding it's real.
That it really is about deciding it's real.
We explore tons of things that I don't believe in, but it's worth exploring because of its impact, I think, on history. And also, it's fucking fascinating.
All right. So it's just stressing me out. This whole, like,
I love,
you know,
that it stresses you out.
Words have meaning. And I'm absolutely. Like, this is meaningless. All right, anyway,
we're only
quiet.
On page 3 of, like, my script.
I'm aware.
Script,
I'm going to be quiet and shut up.
Really, really, really early. So with chaos magic, this belief as a tool approach basically means that a chaos magician can seamlessly switch between different operating systems for reality. And in the occult, there are 4 major ones that have developed over time, shall we say. And it's worth noting that this categorization was kind of popularized by Phil Hine in Condensed Chaos as a way to understand just different approaches. It's just a different lens to look at this shit.
Which was roughly published when? Like the 80s?
Yeah. Oh, shit. I can't remember.
Just so I can kind of place the readership of this. Because I know that nobody was saying the words chaos magic like this till around like the 70s.
Early 90s. 94 is chaos magic. So 30 years ago, a little over. 30? Wait, 40? 40? No, 30. Listen, I don't know about you, but after a late night deep dive into government files and UFO subreddits like I tend to do every night, I need actual rest. Otherwise, I'm decoding crop circle math on 3 hours, discovering that the Riemann hypothesis is actually the solution to consciousness within our three-dimensional reality. And it's, well, at least they used to be me. You know, I've put it away, I promise, because I switched to ghost bed. You know, quick backstory, I run hot. Texas summer, I'm not built for it. I'm from New England. On top of that, I do have studio lights that I use occasionally and a giant cat on my legs constantly. So if a mattress cannot stay cool, I'm done, man. I'm going to wake up middle of the night dripping sweat. Have you ever woken up from feeling a drip of sweat fall off your leg at night? Because I have, and it's literally one of the worst feelings in the world. Luckily, with Ghostbed's patent cooling tech, all that changed. Their Ghostbed Lux, literally called the coolest bed in the world, has a cool-to-the-touch cover and layers of ghost ice that pull heat away all night long. First time I lay down, I felt the temp drop like stepping into an air conditioning. It was almost a little too chilly for me, which is a good thing. I slept through my alarm for the first time in years, and to be honest with you, I'm such a light sleeper. It's kind of crazy. For me, that's just a giant win. Here's how this whole thing works. They have 3 redesigned models, foam or hybrid, with medium or medium firm options, breathable materials, that patent tech that keep you chill, zoned layers that ease pressure and keep your spine in line, you know, which is probably good for your back, and premium builds at up to 50% less than the big brands. Ghostbed is family owned, handcrafted in the USA and Canada, backed by over 60,000 5-star reviews, and every mattress ships fast and free, usually within 24 hours. You get a 101 night at home trial and a 20 to 25 year warranty, double the industry standard. Pair one with their award winning adjustable base, and you've basically built a zero gravity bunker for dreamland. I'm kidding you, it's crazy. Not sure which model fits your sleep style yet? All you gotta do is hit ghostbed.com/chill and take Founder Mark's quick mattress quiz. It dials in a mattress for back, side, stomach, or full paranoia research mode, whatever you do at 3 a.m. anyway. Right now, during their last days of their 4th of July sale, you get 20% off site-wide. Just go to ghostbed.com/chill and use promo code CHILL. That's ghostbed.com/chill, code CHILL. Upgrade your sleep with Ghostbed, makers of the coolest bed in the world. Enjoy the cool, my fellow conspirators. And thank you to Ghostbed for sponsoring today's episode. 30 years ago. I scared myself.
That'd be 94.
Yeah, 94. Exactly. So there we go.
95, 10.
It's less a strict historical timeline and just more of a useful framework as to how to look at this. So first you have the spirit model. This is what he kind of considers the oldest, most traditional view. The other worlds are objectively real. They're inhabited by spirits, angels, demons, gods, elementals. And it's the magician's job is to learn to map these realms and kind of figure out how to contact, bargain with, or command these entities to get things done. When you perform a ritual, you are literally calling a non-physical being to your location.
This is like a theme. This is like a theme to your belief system, right? Like,
correct.
Fundamentally, they're all the same thing that you're describing, but you're using like different,
this is a
shrouds,
different way to use the tool.
Yeah.
It's belief as a tool. Exactly. Yeah. And this is one of 4 different boxes of tools that people can look into. And this one is the spirit box of tools, God, angels, demons, or, you know, whatever religion that you map yourself into.
It's aesthetic.
You know,
yeah.
A priest is more just like a Christian magician, essentially. Right. You think of it like that. And that's what, you know, the magician's job is to map the realms, figure out how to contact, bargain with, command entities. Then with the rise of science in the 18th century, you get the energy model. This model talks about subtle energies like vril energy, astral light, vibe, yeah, prana, the yeah. Wilhelm Reich's orgon energy machine. If you we yeah. touched on of that
thing old is, mage of
the giant, yeah.
That old your, warlock.
Put your yeah. annoying wife in a wooden box machine for him back in the day is all that was. Magic here is more about learning to sense, direct, and manipulate these invisible forces that permeate everything. A spell is an act of directing a current of energy toward a target. So then, and then next, after the breakthroughs of Freud and Jung, came the psychological model. This is the skeptic's kind of favorite toolbox. In this view, the other worlds become the inner worlds. Demons are just repressed complexes in our unconscious mind. Gods are archetypes of the higher self. And magic is a profound form of psychotherapy for personal transformation. A ritual isn't calling a demon. It's an elaborate psychodrama to confront a part of yourself. And then finally, the fourth box we have is current and you have the current and up and coming paradigm that's happening now, the cybernetic model. This one says the universe is essentially information. A lot of this is going to sound very fucking familiar now, and this was written about 30 years ago. This one says the universe is essentially just information, a giant cosmic computer running on probability. Magic, then, is a set of techniques for trying to, for lack of a better word, hack reality, creating a neurological glitch in your own brain that ripples outwards, manipulating probability to cause macroscopic changes in the world.
Shin Megami Tensei.
And as Alan Moore once said, we are, quote, unpredictable beyond the dreams of Heisenberg.
Yeah, perfect.
Those are your four models. Spirit, energy, psychological, and cybernetic. And basically, they all say yes. They don't choose one. They might use the psychological model to explain their results to a skeptic, but then use the spirit model for a full-blown demonic evocation later that day. They use whatever model, whatever belief is most effective for the task at hand. It's the ultimate in magical pragmatism.
It's literally Constantine.
Yes, in a weird way. Yeah. In a weird way, yeah. Whatever's useful in the moment, going through his like
Constantine,
toolbox.
Constantine, let's call him.
I mean, that's not a bad comparison because he kind of funnels his belief through
him,
the different
I've
tools.
I've seen him lose a dude inside of a computer. I've seen him call demons. I've seen him go to a psychiatrist.
Constantine is a fucking chaos magician. That's fucking awesome. I love that.
Yeah,
that's
correct. He sprang from the vogue of it all too. He's like an 80s guy.
That makes sense. But this is why like pop culture becomes kind of a valid source of magical imagery. The rationale is that all symbols, all are equally valid in the chaos magic paradigm. So the practicing chaos magician, the symbolic power of a corporate logo or a comic book character is just as potent and often more so in the modern mind than in ancient Egyptian god form.
100%.
As Phil Hine puts it in Condensed Chaos, quote, "What is important for me is that it showed me more convincingly than any argument or book is that magic is something real." And then that personal experience for him, the results that he got, is the only truth that matters. So where did this utterly bizarre have your cake kind of eat it to approach to the supernatural magic world come from? Because it wasn't born in ancient Egypt or medieval Germany or any of that shit. It was born in the mind of a working class boy in London. A man who was once hailed as the future of the British art world and died in relative poverty. A man who brushed up against the most famous occultists in the world and walked away in disgust, rejecting them. So that's where we're going to begin. We have to start with the grandfather of chaos magic, Austin Osman Spare. Now, Spare's life is a story in itself, kind of a full of contradictions that make for a great subject for the podcast. He was born in 1886 in Smithfield, London, though a few sources claim 1888, but 1886 seems to be the more generally accepted year. And he was the son of a city policeman.
So this he's like a contemporary to like Aleister Crowley. Pretty much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Same time period. Okay.
The exact same time period. You know, and for somebody who was like going to be seen as a potential revolutionary artist, being just like the son of a city policeman isn't like kind of where you would expect to find them. From his earliest days, it was clear that he was different, though. To a lot of people, he was a prodigy, someone that they saw as a genuine artistic genius. And his talent for drawing was so immense that at the age of 17, he became the youngest person ever to exhibit at the prestigious Royal Academy of Arts. The papers and the art critics at Edwardian London went like kind of nuts for this guy. He was seen as enfant terrible, the wild-haired, intense young man from a humble background who could draw like an old master. This man was just very, very skilled. They called him the next Aubrey Beardsley, who was, if you're curious who that was, they were the defining artist of the Art Nouveau and decadent movements at the time. He was on a trajectory to become a celebrated and potentially wealthy, famous artist. This is who created chaos magic. But there was also another current running through his life. Alongside the artistic prodigy was a developing occultist. Spare claimed that as a child, he was initiated into a form of witchcraft by an elderly woman by the name of Mrs. Patterson, who he claimed was descended from a line of New England witches who had escaped the Puritan prosecution in the 1600s. Now, for my own sake and for the sake of historical accuracy, it's worth noting that the story is obviously disputed. Some scholars believe Mrs. Patterson may have been a real local fortune teller that Spare later mythologized to create a more compelling origin for his very personal primal form of magic.
He just got lit up by something cool that happened to him when he was a kid, basically.
And now, again, is it true? Who fucking knows? But what it is it's kind of a classic occult origin story, which might be the whole point in the story being made up in the first place for him. And later writers like Kenneth Grant, who became Spare's champion, certainly leaned into this quote-unquote dark sorcerer narrative. But what's undeniable is that Spare had a lifelong obsession with the unseen, with spirits, and with accessing altered states of consciousness.
What were they doing together, like, when they talk or hang out? Were they, like, doing rituals or, like...
We'll go through it. Yeah. He was one of the first artists to seriously practice what he called automatic drawing, which was the art of the practice of letting his hand move across paper in a trance-like state. It's the idea that your subconscious is kind of controlling it. And years before the surrealists in Paris would claim to have invented it, he was doing it. And he was, in many ways, you know, years ahead of some people in terms of like paranormal practices. And of course, in the small kind of incestuous occult world of early 20th century London, there was one name that overshadowed him and everybody else. You've already said his name before, none other than Aleister Crowley. And it was inevitable that their paths would cross as Spare would remain obsessed with occultism his whole life. Crowley was always on the lookout for new talent and potential disciples, and he saw Spare's work and was impressed. So Spare was briefly brought into Crowley's magical order, the AA, or the Argentinium, or the Argentium Astrum, or the Order of the Silver Star.
Cool. And,
yeah. And for a very short time in 1909, he was a probationer with Aleister Crowley.
Wait, so is Crowley like a little bit his senior? Like, are they
a little bit his senior, a little older? Yeah,
generationally older than him. A little bit?
I think he's like 15 to 20 years older. Right around that time. Yeah, in 1909, he was a probationer, but it didn't last. Crowley's system, Thelema, which is meaningless to you boys right now, but we'll talk about it one day.
I mean, it's pretty well known. Yeah.
For all its revolutionary do what thou wilt philosophy was still, for Spare, incredibly hierarchical and dogmatic. It was filled with complex rituals, Egyptian gods, Kabbalistic correspondences, a strict system of grades and initiations, and so much sex later on. And at the top of it all was the great beast himself, Aleister Crowley, a man with the ego the size of a fucking planet who demanded absolute loyalty to him. And Spare, who was this kind of fiercely independent working class individualist at the time, wanted nothing to do with being like a servant to Crowley. He found the whole scene to be pompous and what he called overly intellectual and frankly, a bit silly.
This is starting to sound like a Constantine origin story, to be honest with you.
That's why I just got to go through this stuff, because it's fascinating. It's important. He believed all that ceremony, all that dressing up and memorizing correspondences was nothing more than a distraction from the real source of power, your own mind. To him, these complex systems were just another trap another set of beliefs to get stuck in. And Crowley, for his part, did not take rejection well. He later wrote Spare off as his quote-unquote black brother, which in his terminology meant a magician who had failed in their development because they couldn't surrender their personal ego to the great work, which for Crowley...
He's a great Jedi, dude. He's a great often, Jedi.
Which for Crowley... Zeta. Conveniently often meant surrendering to him, you know? Like, yeah. And that's just, he's just mad about it. So Spare turned his back on all of that shit.
He turned
He turned his back on the established occult scene and eventually on the fine art world that had once kind of celebrated him. In 1925, he published a scathing manifesto called The Anathema of Zoss, a Sermon to the Hypocrites, which is basically, and I'll give you the link to the actual paper.
So
here
he wasn't
in a second.
Like non-dramatic.
No, he was very dramatic. Yeah, yeah. He was extremely dramatic.
He wasn't like a stoic. He was just like, this is a lot of faffing around the magic.
Yes. Yeah. Basically, this thing that he wrote, I read the whole thing. It's not that long. I'll give you the link to it right now, just so you have it.
Sacredtexts.com, dude. Lol.
Yeah, dude. It's a great site. Thank you so much to ZocDoc for sponsoring today's episode. And hey, Chilluminauts, real talk, listen to me real quick. Remember that doctor's appointment you swore you'd book like 4 conspiracy rabbit holes ago? You know, the one, the dentist visit, that biannual cleaning that's now on the annual physical you've postponed so many times it should be called triannual. And, you know, my personal favorite, the dermatologist checkup, that mystery rash you keep pretending is a birthmark. I know it's not a birthmark, Jesse. Why not book it today? ZocDoc makes it easy to find the right doctor right now, all online. Honestly, you could lock in a slot before this ad read is even over. Lately, my feed's been drowning in wellness checks on my social media, by the way, like wellness hacks, rather. She's like, oh, wellness checks. Wellness hacks. Apparently, cottage cheese is a complete nutrition plan. Let me give you a couple other things. Red light therapy cures every skin problem in the world. And people are chasing olive oil shots like it's like some sort of dawn of a new craft cocktail. So let's give the freaking AI algorithm a break for a minute. And how about you talk to like real life healthcare professionals instead? I know, crazy idea. With ZocDoc, that's as simple as a few clicks though. And look, I'm not getting younger either. These days I'm wrestling with insomnia like always. And sometimes I wake up and my shoulder hurts for no reason, or my back's twitching from hunching over my research notes of aliens and which taco bowl to get at my favorite restaurant. So, you know, it's just finding the right doctor can feel difficult, but it's easy with ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. With ZocDoc, you can book in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, primary care to urgent care, and more. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, are a good fit for any medical need you may have, and are highly rated by verified patients. And once you find the right doctor, you can see their actual appointment openings, choose a time slot that works for you, and click to instantly book a visit. Appointments made through ZocDoc also happen fast, typically within 24 to 72 hours of booking. More often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I use ZocDoc. I promise. I've been using it for a long time because I hate talking to people. And you should too. So stop putting off the doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/chill to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/chill. ZocDoc.com/chill. Basically just a giant middle finger to the art establishment before he retreated into the working class boroughs of South London, where he would live for the rest of his life. Now, I'm just going to give you two prized, like two little quotes I pulled from this thing that I want Jesse to read.
Great casting.
You're an angry, disillusioned Crowley student going on your own. I'll give you you got two quotes. This one first.
There's one in here. I'm hoping it is.
Oh my God, dude.
In this ribald intoxication of hypocrisy, this monument of swindlers' littlenesses, wherein the mystic symposium, the hierarchy of necromancers that was honest, was Sodom. Your theology is a slime pit of gibberish become ethics. In your world, where ignorance and deceit constitute felicity, everything ends miserably, besmirched with fratricidal blood. Thus are ye outcasts. ye habitate dung heaps. Jeez. Your glorious palaces are hospitals set amid cemeteries.
Incredible. insult right at the end.
I was going to have Alex take this one, next one, but maybe Jesse should just read it as well.
I've been playing a lot of Dark Tide, so I got the voice down. So
it's a little shorter, but this is another one I yanked.
It's exactly what you said. Like, what he is saying is just exactly what you said.
Go, who's taking
take
it?
Take it, please.
Jesse, go ahead, take it.
Aside, not save, I come inexorably towards myself to smash the law, to make havoc of the charlatans, the quacks, the swankers, and brawling salvationists with their world-tawdry phantasmagoria, to disillusion and awaken every fear of your natural selves.
I like the
by the way, are we not? Hold on.
Incredible are we not going to read? Incredible reading. Go ahead, whatever you saw in them that you want to read, please. There's so much in there.
You're telling me we're not going to. Like, this man has some bangers in here.
Dude, I can't do the other. I just make you read the whole thing if it was, you know, there's
this
bangers.
Man says, he says, in that ye are cannibals. What meat should I offer, having eaten of your own dead selves, savored with every filth? Ye now raven into glutton of the mind's motion? This guy's wild. This is some
of the
best.
I thought he was trying to be chill. I thought he was trying to like make it.
There's
like
nothing chill about this. This is fantastic.
No. Like Bruce Lee. You know how like Bruce Lee like Jeet Kune Do'd everything together into like.
Every magician I know and have read and studied about, from Crowley to fucking Madame Blavatsky to this guy, they're all dramatic as fuck
this
every
dude
one of them
this dude belongs in Warhammer 40K.
Believe or blaspheme.
Dude, Zeoskir Cultus, the Book of
this
Pleasure.
Guy's just dude, ye are good murderers only, dude.
Speaking of 40K, I went on a little like chaos magic deep dive. Mm-hmm. If you go to chaos magic on Wikipedia, the real chaos, not like not I'm not yeah, again, yeah. Not 40K. The logo of Chaos Magic literally is the logo for Chaos in Warhammer 40K. Yeah. And
dude. It's also the logo for Chaos in Hades.
Let me tell you something.
It's so funny.
Let me tell you something. Let's go back to that John Constantine connection that I made. We're talking about the Thatcher 80s England, which is the exact environment from which Warhammer sprung, the exact environment from which heavy metal sprung. All that shit is all like chaos magic rooted. Alan Moore, all his stuff is chaos. He made his own gods. He's crazy.
He's a chaos magic practitioner. Like by literal definition, that man is like, I've learned a lot about comic book writers and shit from just doing podcasting and from reading the comics.
Are we going to talk about the Invisibles today?
I don't think that's going to be today because maybe next week. We'll see.
Because that's one of the coolest things that I've ever seen.
We'll see what we get to. It's a lot. This guy went from basically being a potential celebrated artistic genius to living in abject poverty, writing these like the scathing manifesto. And at times in a dank Brixton basement is where he's lived at a lot of points in his life around this time. Surrounded by apparently a horde of cats that he looked after. He was living in the basement of a cat lady, I think, and just cats were around him constantly. But he still held exhibitions of his work in local pubs because the galleries had forgotten him at this point. There's even a famous, though likely apocryphal story from the journalist Hannen Swaffer, who claimed Speer was invited by an aide at the German embassy to paint a portrait of Adolf Hitler in 1936, an offer that he contemptuously refused, by the way. So he didn't go and do that.
So this guy's still hero material. I'm taking it.
Yes. Yeah, and it was in this self-imposed occult exile that he refined his own unique philosophy of magic, laid out in his cryptic and brilliant masterpiece, the granddaddy book I referenced earlier, The Book of Pleasure, Self-Love. And this is where we get to the absolute core of what would become chaos magic. Speer called this system the Zeoskir Cultus. Now let's break this down. Zeos, Z-O-S, was Speer's word for the body considered as a whole, the mind, soul, and flesh as one complete unit. This was a radical idea at the time when most Western spiritual traditions influenced by Christianity saw the body as a crude prison for the pure soul inside. And for Spare, the body wasn't a prison. It was the alchemical vessel, the very vehicle of power. Then you have Kia. And then this is a bit harder to define, but he often describes it as as the atmospheric eye, the universal consciousness, the kind of source consciousness, a formless spark of the absolute that resides within everybody and everything. Things we've talked about a little bit in that whole, like, what is consciousness? Is it emergent? Is it an informational quantum right. level thing?
Is it a resource that we are somehow manipulating? Are we itself the consciousness manipulating itself?
Which is why I'm really glad that I didn't do Chaos Magic a few years ago when I first really wanted to, and I waited, because this is a more fascinating angle to kind of come at this from. And now this all might sound, I skipped ahead there. So yeah, Kia is like the source, basically. It's a concept similar to Tao and Taoism, or Brahman and Hinduism. The goal of his magic was to unite the Zeus and Kia, the personal and the universal, and achieve a state of non-dual consciousness. Now this kind of sounds like high magic, but which is the philosophical stuff, but his methods were kind of anything but, which is where chaos magic kind of gets interesting. He developed a concept called atavistic resurgence. Now, this is some fucking truly weird shit. Now, Spare believed that our bodies hold the genetic and spiritual memories of our entire evolutionary past. Not just our human ancestors, but like our pre-human ones,
too. It's like a pre-Wi-Fi version of the new sphere, basically.
Yeah. Apes, lizards, fish, single-celled organisms, all of it. He believed a magician could regress their consciousness back through these evolutionary stages to tap into the raw primal power and instincts of these atavisms, quote unquote. And he would enter. Oh, sorry, I thought Jesse's hand was raised for some reason in the corner of my eye.
I was thinking how this definitely sounds like the plot of a movie, but I literally can't think of the plot of the movie. Or what movie that is.
I don't know why I would even try to think of it, because I haven't
Qui-Gon
seen it.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
There's definitely one of those things. Like, there's a definite story where it's like, we must connect with ourselves in the past, but like everything is.
That's Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely Assassin's Creed, but there's something, I can't remember what it is.
Like,
but
what you're about to say, and the idea that your entire genetic memory is in your body is like literally
Assassin's Creed DNA
foundational to Abstergo's idea. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He would later enter a trance and feel himself becoming a tiger, a snake, a bird of prey, believing that this process released a huge amount of energy from the psyche that could be used for magic.
Now, is there a comma in there?
Yeah.
Feeling himself becoming a tiger or a snake, feeling himself, comma, or was he feeling himself? Oh,
no. Feeling himself become a tiger, comma, a snake, comma, bird.
Okay.
Prey,
well,
comma.
That's fine.
Sorry. I know it's not as fun, but if it was Crowley,
he would have been, there would have been.
No, he would. If it was Crowley, it'd be feeling himself, comma, tiger, yeah. Feeling up a tiger. For him, this wasn't about polite seances. This was about dissolving for him the human ego into something that's ancient and feral, I guess, is a way to put it. Because his central thesis was that the true magic engine is the subconscious mind. He believed that the conscious mind, with its doubts, logic, its socially conditioned baggage, what he called the psychic sensor, is the biggest barrier to magic. Which is kind of funny, just like the weird mushroom trip I had, where just like, your anxiety is like the barrier, dude. It's blocking you from letting go.
It's like the flow state, but like kind of like reverse interpreting the flow state. Like you're saying, like the flow state is actually you at your most attuned, as opposed to your like least attuned in a way. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, like all the doubt, like your mind and all that shit with its doubts and logic and shit. Like that's a problem. That's like
your presence. Your presence and perception is like burdened.
Yes. Yes, a huge burden. Yes, that's exactly correct. The universe that he reasoned anyway is already providing everything you could ever want. You just have to get out. You just have to get out of your own way and like let it happen. The trick is to sneak your desire past the block, to plant it directly into the fertile soil of the subconscious, which would then work to manifest that desire in reality. And his method for doing this is his most famous and enduring creation, the sigil. This is where we get some real practicable magics. Now, we touched a little bit on it before, but let's do a proper like deep dive on the mechanics here, because this is the foundational practice of how this works. So let's just say for this example, your desire, your will is you want to get a promotion. You want to get a promotion at your job. So you would say, it is my will to get this promotion. That becomes your statement of intent. Then Spare's method dictates that you write that sentence down in capital letters. Then you rewrite it, but you remove all the repeating letters. So it is my will to get this promotion becomes ISMY, like WLOGEHPRN. Then some practitioners also will do remove the vowels at this stage. It's not everybody does it. Some people do. But the core idea is to break down the linguistic meaning. You're trying to make it basically a bunch of nonsensical letters. Now that you have this string of seemingly random letters to anybody else but you, your next job is to take these letters and combine them into a single sigil, like an abstract glyph. You're going to overlay them on top of each other. You can twist them around. You simplify them until you have a strange, essentially kind of alien looking symbol.
Like an image.
That should have no obvious connections to the letters that you started with. So you're taking all those letters, putting them on top of each other, twisting them around, creating a sigil that whatever works for you. And you're like, I like that. You know, that's when you have your abstract glyph. This alien looking sigil looks like nothing to anybody. It's just a squiggle, a personal private hieroglyph of your desired will. This is where the psychological trickery has to come in. The most important step is the concept that is called deliberate forgetting. Remember I tried to get you to forget chaos magic in the beginning? This is where this comes in. Deliberate forgetting. Exactly, Jesse. You have to actively forget your original desire. You have to look at this new symbol you've created and see it only as a shape, completely divorced from the wish for promotion for this example. The purpose of this is to prevent what he called lust for result. If you're constantly thinking, did it work yet? Where's my promotion? Did it work yet? Is my sigil working? That conscious anxiety, that attachment to the outcome will completely sabotage the entire operation. You're re-engaging in that psychic weight, that psychic anchor, that psychic sensor. So after you make your sigil, you got to go hide the sigil from yourself for a while. Okay. Then when you've sufficiently forgotten its meaning, you charge it. And to do that, you have to enter a state of gnosis. That is not gnosis, Jesse.
We lost
that
him,
is
dude.
Not gnosis. Yeah. He's been taking, Jesse's taking sleepy gummies. He's having a hard time.
No, it's not. No. No. I just think it's very funny that this is, it's like, all right, create a sigil, then forget the sigil, then come back to it.
You have to forget
then
your
charge
intent.
It.
Yeah, forget your intent behind to the leave sigil.
It right, like, you can't want it.
It's almost like an engram. It's almost like an engram of its own meaning that's like separate from your personal desire at the time. You've literally taken your desire and reshaped
right,
it.
Right, right. But instead of forget about it, come back to it, and now come at it as the sigil and empower the sigil.
Right, but you should know you have the sigil, but you just got to forget what the sigil meant, the intent behind the sigil, only that you trust yourself that the intent was what you wanted.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Okay, so after you do that, now you're going to have to enter. Now you have to, after you find, you got to charge it with energy. And this is gnosis.
How do you do that?
You have to enter a state of gnosis. Now, gnosis is a word that gets used a lot in occultism, but in chaos magic, it has a very, very specific physiological meaning. It's a state of non-thought, a moment where the conscious mind is completely silenced and short-circuited. Like Spare outlined two main paths in the book to this, the inhibitory and the excitatory. Inhibitory gnosis is achieved through methods like slow moving
meditation. Oh, no.
No. Slow moving meditation, yoga, sensory deprivation, scrying or prolonged staring, basically disassociating, quieting the mind to a dead stop. Excitatory gnosis is the opposite. You get there through intense emotion, pain, sensory overload, chanting, drumming, ecstatic dancing, sexual arousal, or even a sudden shock of fright.
I was going to say, I've heard charging only to mean in the past, jacking off on the sigil.
Jacking off all over the symbol. That is, yeah, that is what my common understanding of it was as well. Is like, that's what always sticks.
That's
the easiest for people to do. You know, if you're going to do it, it's like, are you going to get to chanting? Or are you going to take, you're like, well, I could just go jack off really hard and like not think. And just come all over the fucking symbol.
So really, my initial assessment of all this is, again, bored people just, like, Charles,
no, this guy
should,
truly
we,
thought
are
it
we
was...
going to bang atop the sigil tonight? Yes, Benice. Like, that's all this,
this isn't Crowley. This is the poor man living in, like, a basement full of cats.
Yeah, but he wishes he was Crowley. He wishes he's doing purely, the, he's like, I want to be Crowley too.
No, I will stand for this guy. No, he hated Crowley.
He's a revisionist. He's like Martin Luther. He's got problems. He's trying to recontextualize. He's trying to strip out. The reason he's saying forget is because he wants you to like forget your own physical and like mental connections to the intent so that you don't get bogged down.
He's describing anxiety before understanding anxiety was a thing.
Exactly. He's trying to filter out all the hesitance and all that stuff. It's just like we're saying, like, if you look at chaos magic on the grid of four, there's the psychological version, right? It's the same thing as this.
Different tool set to manipulate the same thing, to manipulate reality. Exactly. Correct, Alex. You got it right. You get there and get a fucking sticker on your report card.
Only your perception of it.
Not yet.
This poor man who lived in a basement of cats is now one of the most well-known occultists in the world. Weird how that keeps happening with these people.
He's like well known in the way that Jesse Cox is well known as a YouTuber. Like, you got to really look for
him. Pretty good though, man.
You gotta look for him. You gotta be 45 years old and want to look for him.
You're gonna exist in people's by act.
This guy's like
active.
This guy's Tyler Oakley. This guy's
Jesse,
like Tyler Oakley. Jenna Marbles.
You're practicing chaos magic through the cybernetic toolbox by implanting yourself on the internet for a time much longer than most people will. You are correct. You will live in history in a way that other people won't, because you made the effort to put yourself out there for thousands of hours.
The corporate wars will take down the internet years from now, and there'll be no trace of me. So, like,
oh sure, but like, for your existence now in this world, it's working for you.
No, it's not. I'm on a podcast where I had to listen to chaos magic, which is not a real thing, and pretend that I care.
And
please
that's
continue.
Exactly. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. Just because you don't believe doesn't mean you don't practice it. That's the best
Damn,
part.
Damn, you got me. Touche.
That's like what the forgetting is about, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Basically though, like, one of them for excitatory, that is mostly really what people do. Like, a lot of like beginning chaos magicians just jerk off all over the symbol because the easiest way to blank your brain. In that peak moment of gnosis, though, when like you are in the moment of just absolute jizz center,
dude, I can do it from playing fucking Gran Turismo, though. Like, don't get it twisted.
Absolutely.
You really can. Yeah.
Yeah. Once you're at that point, though, where your brain is like completely gone, your inner sensor is considered offline, and you bring out the sigil and you're supposed to stare at it. You're supposed to like
use
let
that
the energy
moment,
move into it, pouring all that raw, undifferentiated energy right into it. You burn its shape directly in your subconscious mind, and then after you're done with that, you destroy the symbol. Get rid of it. You only do this once with the symbol, the Gnosis act. You destroy it. Burn the paper, throw it in a fucking river, tear it up, I don't know. You
jizz
just throw
on
it away.
It, throw it down the toilet. Actually,
throw
don't
it away
do that.
And
you're
never
gonna fuck your pipes
think-
up. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. And never, ever think about it again. You're done. It's done. The spell is done. You don't return to it. You don't do another one. It's done. The seed is planted in that supposed fertile ground of your subconscious, and now you just let that seed grow unseen.
The reason I feel like this works for Jesse's like mindset on this is that like it's absolutely in every way trying to remove all the bullshit besides literally doing a practical activity and getting a result from it.
You know, the best part is in the next part of my script, I know Jesse so well. Right here in the script, I go, now I can already hear Jesse saying, talking about psychological priming and confirmation bias and all this other stuff, because, you know, that's what it sounds like, right? You like, you build it. He's what it is.
It is.
And honestly, he's not wrong.
Yeah,
that's correct. A modern psychologist would look at this whole process and see a very clever, if rather weird and kind of strange system of self kind of hypnosis, goal setting, cognitive reframing of something. But for Spare and for those who followed him, this was the real deal. This was a technology for interfacing or interacting with reality. And he developed entire systems around this, like his alphabet of desire. His work was kind of dense, idiosyncratic, and deeply personal. And for decades, it was largely forgotten. The domain of a few maybe dedicated collectors of really kind of obscure niche occult stuff. And he ended up dying in 1956, being nothing more than a footnote in the art world and a ghost of nothing in the world of magic. It wasn't until the 1970s that his work would be rediscovered. And this was during the landscape of 1970s Britain, not America specifically. And it was a bit of a pressure cooker over there. The optimism of the 60s had kind of curdled up. The economy was not doing great. And a raw, kind of angry energy was starting to bubble up. This was the era that kind of gave birth to punk rock. It was anti-establishment, anti-tradition, do-it-yourself, and deeply, deeply cynical.
An anti-young boys trying out for the ballet.
Exactly.
They weren't allowed there.
Wow, where I felt like I'm actually over there in that time period. So this is the birth of punk. And alongside this social upheaval, there was an occult explosion happening simultaneously. The Witchcraft Act had been repealed in 1951. And what was once hidden was now kind of bubbling back into the mainstream 20 years later. And you had figures like Alex and Maxine Sanders, the self-proclaimed king and queen of the witches, appearing on television. You had popular weekly magazines like Man, Myth, and Magic on newsstands that detailed everything from alchemy to zombies for a mainstream audience. And the occult was just trendy.
A particular group of English occultists and psychics were traipsing around the countryside searching for a certain verdant colored stone, perhaps, at this time. Also,
you're not wrong, man. Literally at the exact same time, the green stone shit was happening.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were kind of practicing chaos magic own way, dude. But while the occult was being trendy, it was also fragmenting at this time. It was into this volatile mix of punk rock nihilism and occult revivalism that a new and uniquely absurd ingredient was thrown in: Discordianism. Now, we can't talk about chaos magic without talking about Eris, the Greek goddess of chaos as well. The Discordian Society, as popularized in the Illuminatus trilogy by Robert Anon Wilson and Robert Shea, is, in its own words, quote, a tribe of philosophers, theologians, magicians, scientists, artists, clowns, and similar maniacs who are intrigued with Eris, goddess of confusion, and with her doings. The founding myth of Discordianism is laid out in their sacred text, the Principalia Discordia. According to its authors, Malaclips the Younger and Omar Khayyam Ravenhurst, the goddess Eris, appeared to them in a bowling alley in the late 1950s. She was upset that she'd been misunderstood for millennia. She wasn't evil. She was just the embodiment of creative disorder, while her boring sister and Eris represented stultifying order. Eris's most famous act, of course, was the original Trojan War incident. The story goes that Zeus was throwing a wedding party on Mount Olympus and deliberately didn't invite Eris because, well, she's a troublemaker. And furious at the snub, Eris fashioned a golden apple from the Garden of Hesperides, inscribed upon it the word Callisti, meaning to the prettiest one, and rolled it into the party. Naturally, three goddesses, Hera, Athena, and Aphrodite, immediately started fighting over it. I love Greek gods and how humanly petty they are. They're fucking amazing. I love that just like people fighting over who the prettiest one is just such a human, stupid, dumb thing. This divine catfight eventually led to the judgment of Paris, the abduction of Helen, and the decade-long bloody Trojan War, all because of one divinely inspired prank. The Discordians took this and ran with it. They declared that humor, absurdity, and confusion were sacred acts. They pointed out that the entire world of magic and religion was drowning in its own self-importance. Their holy book contains commandments like thou shalt not eat hot dog buns, the law of fives, which states that all things happen in fives or divisible by or multiplies of fives or are somehow related to five if you just look hard enough, and the revelation that every single man, woman, and child on this earth is a genuine bona fide pope. So if you're listening, congratulations on your promotion, boys, and everybody else out there. You guys are actually all popes. This playful kind of anti-authoritarian spirit was a perfect match for the punk ethos, and it just became a crucial element of the chaos magic paradigm. And
I want to also say just separately that this is like the patron deity of the like early to mid-tier D&D, like GM, like this type of energy in general. I feel like it's the same like sort of subversive form, like subversive for its own sake.
Yep, very much so. I love it. It's so much fun, dude. And it was in this environment that two young, brilliant, and deeply dissatisfied occultists, one Peter J. Carroll and Ray Sherwin, found the dusty forgotten works of Austin Osmond Spare. And Carroll was a student of science, deeply interested in quantum physics and cosmology. Sherwin was an enthusiast of Crowley's Thelema. And they met and began publishing a zine. Sound familiar, Alex? There's only a few of them that exist nowadays. And this was, at the time, if you know what a zine was, it's kind of like the classic punk rock medium of the time. And this one was called the Equinox. Through its pages, they expressed their utter frustration with the state of the magical arts. They saw the existing orders as stuffy, stagnant, obsessed with tradition over results, and they wanted something new, something that worked, something that was stripped bare of all the cultural and religious baggage. And in Spare, they found their key. They saw the raw, pragmatic genius of his sigil technique and his focus on belief as a tool. They took Spare's foundational ideas and then fused them with 20th century concept. Quantum mechanics with its observer effect and probability waves, the cut-up techniques of writers like William S. Burroughs and Brian Geisen, and the holy foolery of the Discordianism that we just discussed. They were creating a new synthesis, something that's like a postmodern magic. And in 1978, the same year they announced the formation of the IOT, another influential figure, Genesis P. Orridge, who had studied magic under William S. Burroughs and Brian Geisen, established the Temple of Psychic Youth, but spelled T-H-E-E, and of is O-V, and psychic is spelled Psy-Chick for some reason. This group took these kind of like nascent chaos magic ideas and began to blend them with industrial music, performance art, and the proto-cyberpunk aesthetic that was also beginning to bubble up, further showing how the movement was branching out and cross-pollinating with other countercultures. Carroll and Sherwin, in a 1978 issue of the New Equinox, announced the formation of their new magical order, one based on these principles, and they called it the Illuminatus of Thanateros, or IOT. The name itself is a statement of intent combining Thanatos, the Greek god of death, and Eros, the god of love and sex. And this pointed to the two great overwhelming experiences, the ultimate inhibitory and excitatory states that can propel a person into gnosis. The IOT was to be a meritocracy. You didn't get in by knowing the right people or by paying your dues. You got in by demonstrating you could get results. They declared themselves the spiritual heirs to the Zoskia cultus of Spare. And they published the two foundational texts that I also mentioned earlier, Sherwin, the Book of Results, that slim kind of practical handbook for sigil magic, and the Liber Null. And that is where, the other one is more like magical systems for shamanism, ceremonial magic, etc. Chaos magic simply chooses to do this kind of consciously without getting trapped in any single system, essentially. And it's right here, as we kind of meet these two characters, that we're actually going to kind of bring ourselves to a close for this episode.
It's very much like Jeet Kune Do. I just can't stop thinking about that. It's like so very much the same thing as what Bruce Lee was doing with martial arts. He was like, get rid of all the bullshit. Let's just make it useful.
Yeah, basically, it's the goal. And it's like, this is just the first part of the story. We've now seen the birth of the core ideas of this stuff with Austin Spare. We've seen the cultural explosion that allowed these ideas to kind of just be rediscovered in the unique kind of mixing pot that needed it for it to kind of explode like it did. And we've seen the information of the first chaos magic order by a pair of angry, anti-establishment people. These ideas would continue to spread and evolve with figures like previously mentioned Phil Hine, along with Julian Wild and Joel Baracco, publishing influential books and zines that were particularly important in spreading these techniques through the early days of the internet. The groundwork has just been laid. The theory is one thing. The practice is something else entirely. So next time, if you boys are interested, you only got a week, so, you know, not a lot of time to try it. But if you're interested, in those who are listening, why don't we, if you're willing to give it a shot, open up the Chaos Magician's Toolkit and check it out. Maybe practice a little bit of the glyphs thing. See if something you want to mess with or not. And next week, we'll be talking about creating artificial spirits called servitors, weaponizing pop culture, and the many, many ways one can kind of blast the doors open of perception off their own hinges, because it gets so much weirder than this. And like I said, including magical spirit slaves that will do what you want them to do.
It's all sex.
Like a mining
box. No matter what anyone says.
Sex, brother.
It's all sexually related.
Sexually related, dude.
That's it fantastic. Is.
I want to be sexually related to you. All right.
I don't. What? No.
It's like a it's like a new song. It's a cool song.
Is it?
That's a, not a cool, a cool song.
I want to be sexually related to you. It's kind of good.
Is it?
You can work on it a little.
It's not good.
You can spice it up.
It's not good.
I want to be sexually related to you. That's the Chaos Magic.
Are you boys going to give it a shot before we go? Are we 100% give it a shot?
I'm already giving it a shot every day of my goddamn life on this show. Let me
but
tell you.
Are you going to create a sigil? Are you going to do the sigil practice?
Yeah, I'll do a sigil.
Yeah.
I'll jizz on that sigil if I
can. You should do it.
Yeah.
You should.
No, I'm good.
Okay, well. With that, right. We're off to go record a mini-sode over at patreon.com/JulianMinotiPod. Hey, head over to JulianMinotiPod.
Unless that sigil's yo mama.
Hey. Oh, sure.
Head over to ShaluminatiPod.fm for all the links you need. Buy live tickets. Show tickets while you can. They're going to be sold out very, very soon.
Buy a shirt while you're there.
We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Anyway, me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out of here." So I quickly dash back outside, and she's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky.